The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. Now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wish Jesus hadn't said, be in the world, but not of the world. You like the not of the world part, but you still have to be in the world because it's hard to take a stand sometimes from all the anti-Christian values around us. And yes, that's true. It especially stings during an election year. Christmas is over, New Year's is over, and many people, intoxicated by the splendor of their favorite holiday season, missed a few news stories that broke late in December, creating somewhat less than a splash of controversy while lights, tinsel, and ornaments occupied our thoughts. Ironically, one such story is about as important as news gets, but be warned, after hearing a small portion, you'll probably want to check out again, returning to the carols and eggnog. Late in December, the New York Times reported the following, and I'll just read from it. The Justice Department on Friday blocked a new South Carolina law that would require voters to present photo identification, saying the law would disproportionately suppress turnout among eligible minority voters. The move was the first time since 1994 that the department has exercised its powers under the Voting Rights Act to block a voter identification law. It followed a speech this month by Attorney General Eric H. Holder Jr. that signaled an aggressive stance in reviewing a wave of new state voting restrictions, largely enacted by Republicans, in the name of fighting fraud. Notice how they put in the name of fighting fraud. Couldn't be that the Republicans are really fighting fraud. They're just claiming to fight fraud. They're really doing something devious. Anyway, the story continues. In a letter to the South Carolina government, Thomas E. Perez, the assistant attorney for civil rights, said that allowing the new requirement to go into effect would have significant racial disparities. That was from the New York Times, December 23rd, 2011. And as Eric Holder put it, the same disparities, divisions, and problems that beset the country in 1965 and many Americans for the first time in their lives now have reason to believe that we are failing to live up to the promise of democracy for all. That's the way he was quoted by the Wall Street Journal. And actually, liberal bloggers have been discussing this for quite some time. A writer from Racism Review says those who push for voter identification are really about dominance, reductionism, elimination, racism, and classism. Yes, of course, this makes perfect sense. Why should ID be required before we vote? True, in other situations, self-identification is readily accepted by our society, but everything is different when examining a matter as trivial and unimportant as election. We need photo ID to open a bank account, cash a check, purchase alcohol, rent an apartment, board a plane, buy a gun, rent a car, reserve a hotel room, qualify for a loan, obtain a marriage license, or purchase insurance. But why, oh, why should such precedents lead us to believe that identification is important when choosing our next president? Indeed, should you even dare to propose such a standard, it proves one thing and one thing only. You, sir, are a racist. What? You say you are not a racist? Instead, you are only concerned that somebody who is not a citizen of the United States might manipulate an election in the United States? Well, hold on to your seat, because the inability to admit your racism actually makes you more of a racist than ever. In fact, the more defensive you get on this issue, the more you prove your own guilt. See how it works? Sweet, huh? Such is the conventional wisdom from many of our liberal elite. Now, then, if you wish, you can offer to question such wisdom. Perhaps you don't think it's wise at all. Maybe you want to make a case that political correctness is destroying our society's ability to have meaningful conversations anymore. Go ahead and bark down that alley. Try to prove that what looks illogical actually is illogical. You will fail to make your point and instead prove something else. What will you prove? I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. That's right. Once again, you will demonstrate racism. So just be silent and blend into the crowd. Stop offering your opinion. Keep your big mouth shut. That way you'll come across as smart, compassionate, and sophisticated, at least in the year 2012. Maybe future generations, when reading American history, will marvel at a culture where the cowardly failed to confront the brainwashed. They may even conclude that the Obama administration saw illegal votes as some kind of election advantage. But why worry about history now? Live in the present. Happy New Year. Speaking of elections, boy, Gingrich is really going after Romney with a vengeance, isn't he? He feels betrayed by Romney's negative television ads, which bumped him out of first place during the Iowa caucus. One wonders if Gingrich knows he's going to lose and simply has no agenda left other than to take Romney with him as he goes down in flames. Reminds me of something personal. Years ago, I was playing Risk with a bunch of college students, and I made a deal with my friend Alfredo. It was, you know, if you've ever played Risk, one of those mutual deals where we say, well, we won't attack each other for at least an hour. We'll take out the others, and then we'll finish off and divide the world between the two of us. One of those kinds of deals. Well, he betrayed me and attacked anyway, because there's no rule in Risk that says you have to honor a deal. Oh, I'm going to tell you, after Alfredo betrayed me, my plan changed. No longer was I trying to win the game. All I wanted to do was take Alfredo out. And to accomplish that, that would mean I'd have to waste my armies and I would lose too, but that didn't matter. I was no longer on plan A. I was on plan B. Take Alfredo out. That seems to be what Newt Gingrich is doing with Romney. Now, some of the negative campaigns seem to be working a little bit. He's closing in on him in the polls, but I don't think it's going to work. I don't think Gingrich is going to get the nomination. I don't think he even expects to anymore. I believe his hopes were up. I believe they got dashed. And now it is take out Romney. Many people are saddened to see this side of Newt. For a while, he showed much hope and potential. As voters weigh the pros and cons of the GOP candidates, such as Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney, one positive Gingrich quality keeps popping into the conversation like an enthusiastic jack-in-the-box. The man is a good debater. In fact, our former Speaker of the House keeps reminding us that if given the nomination, he will challenge President Obama to a series of Lincoln-Douglas-style debates, not like the debates that we have on TV when Barbara Walters says, if you could be a twee, what kind of twee would you be? I mean, real debates. Now, that would be fun to see. Of course, wouldn't you love to see Gingrich debate Obama? He'd have him for lunch. But much as that would be fun, don't hold your breath. Even if Gingrich makes a comeback again, don't hold your breath. Remember, both candidates have to agree to debate formats, and it is unlikely, virtually impossible, Obama would ever succumb to a situation where he is not clearly in the advantage. Watch for our president to say that he is content to stick with the tried and true practice of network news people creating questions for each candidate. Should Gingrich refuse such a format, Obama will offer some speeches about how he is willing to work with Newt. But like most stubborn Republicans, the man just refuses to compromise for the good of the American people. Anticipating such a possibility, Gingrich offers Plan B. He will follow the president on his campaign trail, speaking in every place Obama just spoke, so that they will have their debate one way or the other. Sounds clever, Newt. Here's a quotation from Newt Gingrich. He says, from that day forward, for the rest of the campaign. The White House will be my schedulers. Well, Mr. Gingrich might find this novel idea a little bit difficult to carry out. Many of the places Obama speaks at would not give a conservative the time of day. What would happen, for example, if Gingrich followed Obama out to certain college campuses? There's a very good chance he would get shouted down before three words could even roll out of his mouth. This, of course, would be done for the sake of tolerance and diversity. And so, watch for our usual fare of network formats that resemble reality shows more than debates. We'll witness hardball questions for Obama, such as, Mr. President, isn't it true that, unlike Newt Gingrich, you never had an affair? Or, Mr. President, if you fail to get reelected, won't it be a sign that our country is turning back the clock from our redemption of 2008 and becoming a racist nation once again? Questions for Gingrich will be more along these lines. Mr. Speaker, do you really think you stand a snowball's chance in hell of being elected when you're so downright unlikable? Or doesn't the Gingrich family trace its ancestry to the law offices of Scrooge and Marley? Meanwhile, Ron Paul keeps avoiding a big elephant in the room question. When asked in the December Fox News-sponsored debate, I know there have been so many debates you can't even keep track of them, but this one was in December, when asked in that debate whether he would make a pledge to not run as a third-party candidate, Ron Paul dodged the question, but he did say that same evening, anyone up here can beat Obama. He pointed to all the GOP candidates. He said, anyone up here can beat Obama, and the audience cheered. Anyone up there can beat Obama. No, they can't, Congressman. Not if you run as a third-party candidate and siphon off a significant portion of the conservative vote. Later that evening, he was a little more forthcoming with Sean Hannity. When Sean asked him if he would run as a third-party candidate, Paul said, I cannot conceive of it. I have absolutely no thoughts or plans of doing it. Well, that's a relief. Oh, wait. Like the typical politician from whom Paul likes to distinguish himself, this was not all he said. He went on and said more. He said, I don't like absolutes. I don't like to say I absolutely will never do such and such. So I am just avoiding the absolute. Oh, of course. Of course, it's all so clear now. He has absolutely no plans to run as a third-party candidate, but he will avoid absolutes. So we really don't know what will happen. When Paul loses the Republican nomination, and he will, he may still have enough loyal supporters to encourage a third-party bid. Well, the problem is obvious. Just as a congressman will not win the Republican nomination, he will not win a three-way race in the general election either. Instead, if he runs a third-party campaign, Paul will undoubtedly hand the election back to Obama. More on this when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Ron Paul runs as a third-party candidate, he's probably going to hand the election back to Obama. Now, that would be rather ironic, and as much as Obama's domestic policies resemble Paul's about as much as Thomas Jefferson resembles Nancy Pelosi. Many conservatives love the congressman's refreshing discussion of our Constitution, including me. I like his discussion of our Constitution, its original intent, its application to domestic policy. But most of these same conservatives, including me, shake in horror of the man's foreign policy. And rightly so. When it comes to assessing an evil enemy, the application of Paul's policy would be an unmitigated disaster. What else can one conclude when he doesn't feel we have a right to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon? His views make Obama's foreign policy look prudent. And I thought that was impossible. Many modern elections have had third-party candidates who made no more difference to the outcome than a pesky mosquito, but most of them do not share the popularity of Ron Paul. Two candidates running against Obama in the fall of 2012 will probably hand the election to Obama by splitting anti-Obama votes, dividing both Republicans and independents who are unhappy with our current president and must now choose between Paul or some other candidate whose own record or skeletons from the past make him less than ideal. To any who still doubt, I offer two short words. Ross Perot. In 1992, he took votes away from President George H.W. Bush seeking re-election. Now, of course, Bush made part of his own bed with that broken "read my lips" pledge, but Bill Clinton still won with less than 43% of the national vote, compared to Bush's 37% and Perot's 19%. United, the anti-Clinton voters would have defeated Clinton easily. Ron Paul knows this. I'm not one of his fans, but the man is intelligent. After all, to be a physician, let alone a successful congressman for many repeat terms, a person must have something on the ball. Oh, yeah, with foreign policy, Paul does not come across as the sharpest pencil in the box. But he certainly understands the consequences of running as a third-party candidate. He's smart enough to understand that. And so, our friend Ron Paul may soon be facing his own moment of truth. Is his passion really based upon a love for the American Constitution, or is it being fed by ego? There is also a question of sheer ethics. By participating in the Republican debates, Paul is stating, indirectly at least, that he supports the Republican Party. Well, all right, is this honest support or merely an excuse to participate in debates and receive a national forum? It would be disingenuous to enter the race as a Republican only to abandon this same party simply because he technically loses but still retains a large following. Ron Paul, the day is dawning when you must put up or shut up. A second term of Obama may just end any honest application of the Constitution you vigorously defend once and for all. How sad if you, of all people, make that happen. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, our call-in toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Many people connecting with me through Facebook, through Twitter, directly, through email, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. People responding not only to the radio version of these monologues, but also the literary version, as I write these as articles for the Washington Times. And some of the people responding use nicknames. Eagle Soars is one such nickname. He's talking about the voter identification discussion. Eagle Soars says, in California, the illegals don't have to have a driver's license or insurance. Our governor rates them ahead of the citizens that pay his salary. Nick says, great article, Mr. Siegel. Conservatives and independents used to be intimidated by the type of arguments you mentioned, such as racism. However, the tide has changed in the last 2 years, and bullying does not work anymore. The dirty tactics used by the left are becoming more transparent. In fact, by pushing these crazy ideas, the left is causing more outrage among conservatives and independents. This will undoubtedly lead to a second major victory for the right in the upcoming elections. As a final comment, even Jimmy Carter is in favor of voter ID. Need I say more? What, Jimmy Carter did something that took brains and intelligence? I must be living in bizarro land. Grouchy says, the only people that this would affect are those who try to rig an election and the dirt poor, ignorant illiterates. You can hoodwink those people, but reasonably intelligent people have photo IDs on their person at all times. Who's kidding who in this fight? Mary also agrees with me. She says, don't worry, we're going to have plenty of people disagree with your old pal Bob on a lot of stuff, but I always like to start with the positive ones. It's kind of a warm-up, for the show. Mary says, the facts are the claim that large numbers of minorities don't have ID is a lie. These people couldn't rent an apartment, cash a paycheck, or a welfare or social security check without an ID. The state of South Carolina provides free state IDs for citizens, and in all candor, the claim that poor people can't get the documents to get such an ID is a lie, because without those same documents, you can't get welfare. Very good point, Mary. Then she continues. She says, the Democrats don't give a damn. I didn't say that. Mary did. Mary said that. About black Americans. It's illegal aliens who don't have these IDs. Black Americans were voting long before large numbers of illegals started coming to South Carolina and stealing the jobs of poor South Carolinians, including the jobs of poor black Americans. Funny, the Democrats want to ignore it when black Americans in South Carolina scream about losing their jobs to illegals. This is all about Democrats wanting their imported illegals to illegally vote to give them a permanent lock on power. On the other hand, Catherine buys the liberal line hook and sinker. She says, it discriminates. And to go out and purchase a photo ID becomes a poll tax because money must be paid before a person can vote. Is the South Carolina law racist? I don't know what's in the hearts of the South Carolina lawmakers, but I do believe that it is a way of disenfranchising lots of Democratic voters, particularly African Americans in a state that is heavily African American who just happen to be Democrats. Wonder if there is a correlation. Well, you can stop wondering, Catherine. There is no correlation except in the minds of people who wish to fan flames. Would you make the same arguments for people wanting to drive without a license or take out a loan without identification? You conspicuously avoided responding to that part of my statement. As for poll taxes, on the East Coast, money must be paid to even drive on roads. And even without poll taxes, we pay for the gas to drive anywhere. We all pay for things in our society. Where does the accusation of discrimination stop? Don't you think this is getting just a little bit ridiculous, Catherine? Besides, the South Carolina law provides free ID anyway. There goes your entire argument. All right, concerning Newt Gingrich thinking he'll debate Obama in a real Lincoln-Douglas debate, Shepard says, there is absolutely no way that Obama will agree to debate Newt Gingrich. I'm convinced that the only conservatives willing to vote for him are the uneducated and ill-informed because they should know that the debate would never take place. Gingrich as POTUS would be a huge mistake. As a true conservative, I find it appalling that he is considered the front runner. He was saying this back when Gingrich was the front runner. He's not the front runner anymore. His own party jokingly called him a sociopath and power-hungry. America doesn't need another Obama. Well, I don't think Gingrich is another Obama. The difference between Gingrich and Obama is night and day. So I agree very little of what this guy said. We do agree, though, that Obama's not going to allow this debate anyway, even if Gingrich gets the nomination. And I don't think Gingrich is going to get the nomination. But I'll tell you what I do think. I think that we will be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Been reading some internet responses to some of my monologues today. And, of course, the literary version of them that can be found in Washington Times Communities. As for what I said about Ron Paul, my Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Table Talk, got 395 comments, most of them from Ron Paul lovers. And some of them are the nastiest things I've ever said. These are arrogant little cusses. Don't worry, I won't read all of them on the air. I didn't even read all of them myself. After a while, I got the idea. I thought the Obama people were groupies, but these Ron Paul sheep are in a class by themselves. Now, not all of them. If you're listening and you love Ron Paul, I know Ron Paul has many intelligent supporters, okay? And I know there's even intelligent people who voted for Obama. Yikes, I understand that. There are always exceptions, but boy, as a general rule, I think some of these comments speak for themselves. Now, let me say, I myself will vote for him over Obama. I've said that before. I've said it many times. Now, don't take that too seriously, because I would vote for Donald Duck ahead of Obama, so that's not that much of a compliment for Paul. But like I said in my article, and I said today over the air, I love him on domestic policy. If he'd just keep his mouth shut about foreign policy, things would be okay. So anyway, if he gets the nomination, and he's not going to, but if he did get the nomination, I would vote for him. I don't think my Ron Paul friends could say the same thing if the situation's in reversed. If Paul doesn't get the nomination, I don't get the impression that most Ron Paul people will gather behind the Republican nominee, whoever he is. Anyway, here's a sample. Take a gander, folks. This guy calls himself Soldier in the Ron Paul Army. And he sounds like a soldier in the Ron Paul Army. He says, maybe you should ask the other GOP candidates if they will pledge to not run this third party when Dr. Ron Paul wins the nomination. The reason I said it like that is the word when is in capital letters and the word win is in capital letters. So you're supposed to read it like that. You're supposed to go, when Dr. Paul wins the nomination. All right. So maybe the other GOP candidates should make that pledge. Most of them have, buddy. Most of them have promised exactly that. They've said any one of us. I've heard that from Romney. I've heard that from Gingrich. I've heard that from Santorum. Okay? The guy that's not making that pledge is Ron Paul. Anyway, this one's from Brittany. Brittany says, will someone please administer a sanity check to Bob Siegel? Quite clearly, there's something not all there with this man. And a cesspool of insane warmongers in both the GOP field and the White House. Only Ron Paul seems to be thinking clearly about foreign policy. That Siegel seems incapable of grasping this is startling. Even more astounding is his inability to understand that Paul's non-interventionist foreign policy is also the biggest tactical advantage over his rivals. Yeah, well, you know who loves Ron Paul's foreign policy, Brittany? Ahmadinejad of Iran. He just loves it. Brittany, I'm going to say this as nicely as I can. You really should stop writing comments on political articles. You simply do not know what you are talking about, and it is demonstrated in volumes. That having been said, you are invited to debate this matter with me on my radio show anytime. With your wisdom and my need for a sanity check, the debate should be easy for you. What do you say, Brittany? Seth says, Republicans like you make me ashamed to be a registered Republican. But I became a Republican precisely because of Ron Paul. So don't you tell me or us what this party is about, because we're taking it over. Seth, pal, I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative Democrat. Independent Thought says, and he's quoting from my article, when Paul loses the Republican nomination, and he will. And then he writes, stopped reading there. Hey, Independent, this may come as a big surprise, so hold on to your seat. I could care less where you stopped reading. It doesn't exactly keep me up at nights. This next guy calls himself King. King says, well, Bobby. Oh, King, you cut me to the quick. You're going to call me Bobby? Oh, no. Whatever will I do? Will I ever show my face in this town again? King called me Bobby instead of Bob. Whoa, King. You sure showed me. All right, I'm having fun with this, as you can tell. King says, well, Bobby, we, the people who have woken up, will no longer let people like you, who have destroyed all the good that this country once stood for, stop us. If Ron Paul does not get the nomination, we will still vote for him. Unlike you, Bobby, who thinks any Republican is better than Obama, we do not. Once you understand what the Ron Paul revolution really is all about, I hope you join us. My friend Ron Paul himself said any Republican was better than Obama. So you're not even following your own hero. And I've destroyed the good of our country. I've destroyed the good of our country. You know this. How exactly? We never even met. I'm pretty sure. I don't think I would have forgotten you. Did you actually read the article? Because I said in the article, and I assume you would say this too, that I prefer Ron Paul's application of our Constitution to Obama's. But try to track with me. If Paul runs as a third party, we will probably get Obama. And if you think Obama is not different than any of the Republican candidates, if you haven't noticed that with domestic matters, Paul is much closer to Republicans than Obama is, that that's like the understatement of the century, then you've got some serious thinking to do. Sam says, this is sheer drivel, devoid of any true journalism. You think that Paul should simply bow out to allow someone like Romney, whose views Paul completely disagrees with, and I might add are really not that different than Obama, to win the race? You think that he should put up or shut up, meaning that rather than actually sticking to his view, he should simply whore himself out? His allegiance to some absurd organization, a warmonger, bloodthirsty, anti-liberty police state organization? Didn't know you felt that way about our country, Sam. That should be held more important than his true beliefs. That's what would make him real in your eyes. Shameful. P.S. I hate Obama and I'm not a Democrat. I never said, my friend, that he should bow out, so perhaps you should watch the drivel of your own writing. You're arguing against things I never actually said. I said, and I guess I need to say it again, that if he loses the nomination fair and square and is really against Obama, he should unite behind the Republican nominee rather than running a third party and handing the election to a man who stands against everything he stands for. Now, what part of that is so hard for you to understand? Kowser says, wow, Bob Siegel, not making many friends on this one. Might want to rethink your short-sighted, warmongering stance before you write your opinion next time. Oh, of course. The opinion of the majority must always be the correct opinion. That's brilliant logic. That's why Ron Paul people speak against the majority in the Republican Party all the time. And me not wanting a Hitler dictator who says he'll wipe Israel off the face of the map, that makes me a warmonger. But I saved the best for last. And I'll tell you the best one when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Okay, let me repeat this again. Let me clarify this again. If Ron Paul gets the nomination, I will vote for him. You Ron Paul fans, will you do the same if the situation is in reverse? And I respect Ron Paul's domestic policy. I have trouble with his foreign policy. So do most Republicans, and that's why he won't get the nomination. So I know you don't like me speaking so prophetically and fatalistically, but he ain't going to get the nomination, Jack. You need to face up to that. And let me also say again, I know many, many bright, free-thinking people who like Ron Paul. But the ones that wrote in to me, the ones that responded to my article in Washington Times Communities, they didn't exactly bowl me over with their intelligence. And I told you I saved the best for last. This one is from TST. I'm not sure what TST is supposed to stand for. But TST says this about me. Siegel is married to Jane Siegel, who works for the United States Department of Commerce. And to prove that that statement is true, this guy got it from Wikipedia. So it must be true. TST, I am not married. I'm not married at all. You are confusing me with somebody else. Check your facts. You are aware that there can be more than one person named Bob Siegel. Now, I couldn't resist looking that up in Wikipedia. It refers to Robert Siegel. That's who's married to Jane Siegel. Robert Siegel, radio host for NPR. And yes, we have the same name, but our views could not possibly be more different as night and day. Well, we are the first two Bob Siegels that pop up in a Google search. In fact, mine actually pops up first. But we are the first two Bob Siegels that pop up in a Google search. But again, check your facts before making comments. That way you'll have at least a little credibility. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. I think that's enough politics today, but not enough controversy. I still love controversy. And lately, I've gotten a couple of very interesting, very controversial questions from Christians. Questions that relate to the Bible, but are not directly answered in the Bible. So we're forced to speculate. Of course, many pastors don't like speculating, so sometimes they'll speak as if they do have a Bible verse. And those Bible verses they pull out fit like, you know those jigsaw puzzles that you get for Christmas? I know Dana's in here. She got one for Christmas and loved doing it. You ever looked for this piece in a jigsaw puzzle that's driving you crazy? You just can't find it. And all of a sudden you find this piece and the color looks like it matches and the shape looks like it matches. But then you put it in and it doesn't really fit. Well, instead of immediately discarding it, you're in denial. You keep telling yourself, this had to be it. This had to be it. This had to be it. Well, that's what Christians sometimes do when they try to make the scriptures say things they don't really have. Okay, here's the two controversial questions. See, I told you about controversy and then I got off on a tangent about jigsaw puzzles, and you're waiting me for me to get back to the point. Question number one, Bob, do animals have souls? Will animals be in heaven? Question number two, is there sex in heaven? Now, they're both good questions. You've probably wondered about both questions, and yet if you had to choose one, I'll bet the sex question has most of your attention. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make that the second question. I'm going to do the one about pets first. See, I know how to keep people listening. I'm no dummy. Now, for years, I've heard pastors teach that animals do not have souls. Oh, maybe they don't, but I have only one problem with that. I don't see that taught anywhere in the Bible. It may be true, it may not be true, but I don't see it taught in the Bible. On the other hand, I tend to doubt that we'll see resurrected flies and mosquitoes in heaven. God probably made them after the fall anyway. C.S. Lewis, the brilliant philosopher and writer known mostly for Chronicles of Narnia, but wrote some brilliant nonfiction pieces, wrote a book called The Problem with Pain. And in The Problem with Pain, he had a chapter called Animal Pain. Now, what I liked about C.S. Lewis is that he was willing to get into some of these gray areas. He was willing to offer his opinion. Of course, he did it with humility. He would be the first one to say, hey, I'm throwing this out. This is something to consider. But he made a comment, and in his opinion, not all animals would resurrect from the dead, but if human beings had a pet or an animal that they interacted with and that pet became important to them, well, the idea would be that if your pet is important to you, then your pet is important to God because human beings are important to God. Now, I know a lot of you animal rights activists don't like hearing any of this. A lot of the animal rights people today think that animals are just as important to God as human beings. In fact, even more important. Oh, years ago, I heard a lady call in a talk show, and she was talking about how her pet cat was as important to her as her daughter. She said, I have two daughters, my human daughter and my cat, who's a female. And so they asked her, they said to her, well, if you had a choice and either your cat was going to die or your daughter was going to die, who would you choose? And she says, well, my daughter's been alive longer than my cat, so I think I'd have to pick my cat. Okay, I love pets, and I have a cat at home who I love dearly, but I'm operating off of the premise that of all the creatures God created, human beings are the most important to him. God loves animals. God created animals. God does not care about animals as much as he cares about people. However, and I would agree with C.S. Lewis on this, if your pet is important to you, it would be important to God. But C.S. Lewis really went beyond there. He took the idea that we're made in God's image. Now, part of being made in God's image is we create. Obviously, when men and women have a marriage, there's procreation, what we call, when they have children. But we create in many different ways. I'm a writer. I like to write books. I like to write plays. I like to write scripts. Some people paint pictures. Some people do computer programs. Some people are engineers. Some people are masons. But we as human beings like to create. Well, Lewis suggested, and I think he may have been onto something, that there could be something in the interaction between a human being and a pet. Now, what makes this even more interesting is for years and years and years, people have been talking about their pets having different personalities. Some of you are dog lovers, some of you are cat lovers. I won't get into those that like rabbits, but we've come out of a cat family. Every one of our cats, completely different personality. Oh, they were all stubborn and finicky, and they all had the cat qualities, but there were other qualities beyond them. And dogs is different as night and day. People for years have been talking about the intelligence of their pets, the personalities of their pets. Zoologists, for the longest time, did not take that seriously. And there was a reason for that. They felt that unless an animal was being studied in its natural habitat, it wasn't really worth studying or learning anything. They felt that they weren't seeing the animal behave in its true way. And so the relationship between a human being and an animal, which might bring a personality out of an animal, was not of interest to them. In just the past few years, zoologists have just gotten interested. Now, I'm not a zoologist, so how do I know this? Well, I saw this on a special on PBS. That's how I know this. Okay. But I did find it really fascinating. So if you have a pet that passed away and you're in heaven, how hard could it be for God to resurrect your pet just for you? I think he will. Now, I have a hard time believing that my cat will be in heaven and not hell the way he behaves, but we'll save that discussion for another time. All right, the second question. Is there sex in heaven? You're going to find out when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Well, maybe you'll find out. Maybe you'll just hear my opinion. But you'll hear me say something about it when we return.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. One of the questions that I've gotten from time to time from Christians and just recently, is there sex in heaven? Now, most Christians would say, no, there is not. In fact, they'd even go beyond that. They'd say, not only is there no sex, no act of sex, we will not even have our sexuality. We won't even have gender. You will no longer be a man or a woman. You'll be some asexual creature when you get to heaven. I've been hearing that since I was in college. I got to tell you, it made me less excited about the hope of the resurrection. I started hearing this and I'm going, hey, God, I'm in no hurry to get to heaven. I don't want to become some asexual being. Is there a verse that Christians use to back this up? Yeah, there's a verse. There's always a verse. Sometimes they take it out of context and read it like a fortune cookie. But yeah, they got a verse. Here's the verse. Galatians 3:28 says, there is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are all one in Christ. Well, that settles it. It says right there, neither male nor female. Okay, now we got a problem. This was found in the book of Galatians. Here's the short version first. The book of Galatians was not talking about what life will be like in heaven. They were talking about life in the present, in the here and now. They were talking about the church. They were saying that your status of race, such as Jew or Greek, or your status of freedom, such as slave or free, or your status of gender, such as male nor female, has nothing to do with the way you'll be respected in the church. The church was one of the first pure ideas of equality in our society. The reason Galatians was written is because, as you know, Christianity grew out of Judaism. I'm a Jewish Christian. That's rare today. In the early days, that was not rare. Jesus was Jewish. His disciples were Jewish. Originally, the church was Jewish. When a Gentile wanted to become a Christian, the church would get together and argue about whether that person first had to become Jewish. And people were continuing to insist on that, even though the apostles had finally worked that out and said, no, a Gentile need not become a Christian. But in the church of Galatia, they were saying, okay, well, if you're a Gentile and you're not willing to convert to Judaism, you can still come to church, but you're kind of a second-class citizen. And some of the Jewish Christians got all haughty and went and sat at a separate table and wouldn't eat with the Gentiles. So Paul's telling them to stop doing that. He's saying your status, your class that may be important out in society goes away when you enter the church. By the way, I think this raises tremendous implications because the Bible always gets accused of being this chauvinistic book. They say, well, in the Bible says women aren't allowed to teach. Well, temporarily, Paul did not allow women to teach because women had been uneducated, but they were being educated, and that seemed to be a temporary command. Can you imagine in the early church saying, well, in this church, we're all equal. We're all equal. We're neither Jew nor Greek. However, only Jews are allowed to teach. That wouldn't make sense. Or they say, well, out in the world, you may be slaves and you may be free, but I'm sure you can understand, if you're a slave, you can never teach in our church. Well, that wouldn't make sense. But what do we do as Christians today in our own churches? Whether you're male or female makes no difference. You're all one in Christ, but only men can teach. So I think we have to rethink some of these things. But anyway, my main point is that when Paul says you're neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, he's talking about our status in the church. He's not saying that women's anatomy change when they go through the door or that men are no longer men. So this is not a verse about heaven. So let's get back then to the question. There is nothing that says we won't continue to be male and female. We're told that God created Adam and Eve, male and female. When God created Adam and Eve, was this some prototype that wasn't going to work and it wasn't his best plan of creation? Adam and Eve, if they had not sinned, God had told them, be fruitful and multiply. That's a command to have sex. That's what they were going to do. And they were immortal. They were never going to die. They were going to populate the world and live and enjoy that position for all of eternity. So we know that at least originally, the human beings that lived immortally with God in paradise were going to have sexual relations. It's only because Adam and Eve chose to disobey God that they went from immortality to mortality. They went from purity to sinfulness. And now Jesus comes along and he fixes that. He says, I'm going to pay for your sins on the cross. I'm going to rise from the dead so that you can someday be returned to heaven. heaven probably exists in some other dimension somewhere, but heaven and Eden is kind of the same place. In other words, it's paradise. It's a place where we will dwell with God. So I can't prove this, but it seems to me that when we go to heaven and we rise from the dead, we're just fixing this condition. God never intended for human beings to ever die at all. He intended for us to live forever. And it seems that Jesus has just fixed that so that we're in heaven. It's probably going to be the way things would have been for Adam and Eve if that hadn't been interrupted. Now, some say, well, no, that's not true. We'll have different kinds of bodies than Adam and Eve did. Okay, they can't prove that anywhere. It's possible. Now, one thing that the Bible is clear about, though, and this is why sometimes when the Bible's clear on one thing, people then read all kinds of other things in it. The Bible is clear that there's no marriage in heaven. Well, Bob, how can heaven have sex without marriage? All right, I know what you're thinking. I know what you think. We'll put a hold on that. Let's just do this one piece at a time. We do know there won't be any marriage in heaven. Now, my Mormon friends won't like that. Mormons teach that there is marriage in heaven. In Luke chapter 20, there's a story of the Sadducees. Jesus was always arguing with these two groups, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The Pharisees were like the rabbis, the teachers of the law. The Sadducees were the priesthood. And, of course, the priesthood had once been a real pure, noble thing, but it had become corrupted. It was the highest bidder could become the high priest because the Romans were now instituting the high priest. The days when you had to be a descendant of Moses' brother Aaron were over. And the Sadducees and the Pharisees are always arguing against Jesus, and they're frequently denounced together by Jesus, but they actually had very little in common. In fact, the only thing they had in common is that they both hated Jesus. But the big difference between the Sadducees and the Pharisees is the Pharisees believed in the resurrection from the dead. The Sadducees did not. They thought that was nonsense. Now, are there some books in the Bible that talk about the resurrection from the dead? Yes, there are. Most notably, Daniel in the 12th chapter makes it very clear that there will be a resurrection, and some will go to heaven and some will go to hell. It's not emphasized much in the Old Testament, but it's there. However, it's not found anywhere in the first five books of the Bible, those five books commonly known as the Law or the Torah. Coincidentally, Sadducees only accept the first five books. Oh, what a coincidence. If you show them some verse that proves the resurrection, they're going to say that's not in the Torah. That's not in the first five books. Well, a lot of times the Sadducees or Pharisees would like to stump Jesus with a question. They wanted to make him contradict himself. And the Sadducees were seeking to show how ridiculous the resurrection was. And they use an Old Testament law which said that if your brother died, you had to then take his wife and make her your wife to carry on your brother's name. So the Sadducees said, boy, that custom, if we couple it together with a resurrection, could raise interesting questions about if a woman dies and she gets to heaven and she's got two husbands now, one guy and his brother. So let's throw this to Jesus. We'll make Jesus look like an idiot. So anyway, I'm reading here from Luke 20. Starting with verse 27. Some of the Sadducees who say there is no resurrection came to Jesus with a question. Teacher, they said, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies and leaves a wife but no children, the man must marry the widow and have children for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first one married a woman and died childless. The second and then the third married her. And in the same way, the seven died leaving no children. Finally, the woman died too. Now then, it's almost like they're going, aha! Now then, at the resurrection, whose wife will she be? Since the seven were married to her, Jesus replied, the people of this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of taking part in that age and in the resurrection from the dead will neither marry nor be given in marriage, and they can no longer die, for they are like the angels. They are God's children, since they are children of the resurrection. But in the account of the bush, even Moses showed that the dead rise, for he calls the Lord the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living, for to him all are alive. Now, see what Jesus did? He knew those guys only went by the first five books, so even though the first five books didn't explicitly talk about a resurrection, it was implied. He says, God calls himself the God of Abraham. Is he the God of the dead or the living? Well, the living? Well, then Abraham must still be alive. Ergo, there's a resurrection. So no, there's no more marriage in heaven. If you're married now, you will not be married anymore in heaven. Does that mean there's no sex? Well, most Christians want to say no, because when you think of sex outside of marriage, you think of something dirty. If you think of communal sex, you think of some orgy. Obviously, there's going to be nothing like that. Could there be some kind of sexual expression that we don't understand now? Could it be that because of our fallen state, because of our sin, the only kind of commitment we can possibly have with sex is marriage as we know it? Could there be another kind of commitment in heaven that would not be dirty? Well, that's almost inconceivable to us because we haven't resurrected. And therefore, when we resurrect, we'll find out. I think it's possible. I'm going to get myself in a lot of trouble. But I think it's possible. But you have to put out of your mind sex outside of marriage as we presently understand it. All right, I will see you next week. You are always welcome. Your questions, too.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.